Hello, I am Katrina Collier, and as part of my mission to inspire all the people that recruit people to treat people better, I bring you the Hiring Partner Perspective Unedited podcast. Here, you will hear from those hiring leaders who create true partnerships with recruiters, HR, and talent acquisition because they know that it delivers a better result for the business and a better human experience. May this podcast inspire other hiring leaders to create better partnerships with their recruiters and HR. And may it inspire recruiters to create true and valuable partnerships with their hiring leaders. Because people make businesses succeed and people matter. So let us begin. Roderick Lambert, welcome to the Hiring Partner Perspective Unedited podcast, proudly supported by the people at WorkDrive. Welcome, welcome.
Hi, Katrina. Thank you very much for inviting me. Rather weird to be on the other side of the video link with you, I must say, but I'll do my
absolutely
best.
We will explain what that is all about in a minute. Anyway, you've jumped into the fold because my mission with this was to interview hiring managers, so people in the hot seat hiring in the business and hear their perspective, particularly those brilliant ones who partner with recruiters so well. But I'm finding they're being a little bit elusive. And I was like, okay, so what can I do that's still along that vein that will still be of value to recruiters that they're not currently hearing? And I thought, I know, let's talk about the partnership and how to build that and what's great. So I thought, oh, I know the person. Roderick Lambert's my person. But we'll explain why in a second. Can you give us a bit of background into what it is you do? I mean, obviously we met in unusual circumstances as well. So sort of fill everyone in on what you do and how you got to where you are, like a career snapshot.
Okay, well, I'll get to the unusual circumstances as well at the end. So basically I was born in the UK. After university, I moved to the Czech Republic or Czechia. To be with my the love of my life today, my wife, and where I have family from, and I sort of got into HR first of all. I mean, I've always been my professional career has always been in recruitment and HR up until fairly recently, and yeah, I started off in a small language school recruiting teachers, managing them, and then that school grew enormously, and an HR role kind of appeared that I filled. very happy to fill. So I did less of the recruitment and management, more of this sort of general HR stuff. And that was kind of the start of my HR career, which led me to multinational corporation, a finance group called Societe Generale, where I became the local HR director for the insurance company there. And there again, my career continued. Went after 4 years, I was kind of zone HR director for the EMEA region for the insurance division. And then I moved into the local, the big local bank here, 7,500 employees, pretty big by standards, as an HR business partner. So when it comes to partnering, hiring managers and recruitment, I've been recruiting. I've been that middleman as HR business partner. I've been a manager myself. And I've worked with dozens of CEOs and C-suites and board of directors, board members of the board, rather, in all aspects, of course, of their leadership and management and organizational development. But, of course, in particular, working as that middle piece between hiring manager and internal recruitment team or even external headhunting team. So until recently.
And then there was a change.
I reached my kind of midlife self-reflecting piece. I don't want to use the word crisis because it wasn't a crisis, but it was becoming one for sure.
Yep.
Turned 40, adopted my beautiful son.
I'm sorry, 40 is not midlife.
But it's the start, perhaps. It's one of those milestones.
I've decided my next birthday is midlife.
Well, now that I'm 46 and a half, I would agree with you. But what I've experienced myself, I certainly would say that that there's still plenty of years left to me in me for sure. So I decided basically that I couldn't be a good husband, father, HR business partner. Just couldn't keep it up. And what's more, What's more, the purpose was to create value for the shareholders. And I decided that that wasn't really what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I mean, it was pretty good for the first 20 years, worked well. But that midlife kind of questioning, is it worth it? So I did a lot of soul searching, discussions with my wife, reading, listening to podcasts, etc., and realized that actually purpose, you can grab your own purpose, because actually we as humans only have one, and that's to evolve in the evolutionary process. Otherwise, it's up to us. So I decided that my purpose wasn't going to be found in the corporate walls and the structures. Mm-hmm. I decided after a long time to quit the job, and fell into coaching, because that was the one part of the HR function, business partner function, that I enjoyed. People tended to think I was good at it, even though I know now that what I was doing then wasn't really coaching, more like consultancy. Did a year's transformational course where not only did I learn how to be a good coach, but I also did a sort of personal transformation.
And
today, that's what I do.
It's funny you say you fell into it. If you actually go back to the beginning, you fell into HR. Which is unusual, because people usually choose HR and fall into recruitment. But you said, oh yeah, I was in recruitment, and then the HR evolved and it appeared in the company. And then you felt, that's interesting.
That's very true. A lot of my colleagues in that kind of generalist or business partner role came from external recruitment, for instance, agencies and stuff. And I guess that kind of would seem a logical step. And I fell into HR generalist from... falling into recruiting native English speaker teachers. Studied a music degree. So, you know, I mean, it's pretty
interesting. Yes. Which, unfortunately, unless you like, you have to be the best of the best, don't you? So, and of course, I met you at Disrupt HR Prague.
Well, it was actually a different event, actually. I'm not sure you were at Disrupt HR, but it was a seminar by Tatiana.
So it was, of course.
HR Art, it was called. And you were right.
Oh, my goodness. Sorry, Tatiana.
And we chatted. I was there to network.
She's since run that. That's right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Yes. And, of course, the big thing is now you're my coach.
Right.
Which is so exciting.
Unusual. So no boozy evenings in a bar, I'm afraid. It was HR networking event.
It was a great fun event. A great fun event. But I love having you as my coach. And it's funny because how long has it been now? It's over a year, isn't it?
Yeah.
14, 15 months. And I quite regularly will turn up to the session with absolutely no idea what I need from the session, but I always come out with exactly what I needed, which is the bit I love, because you just have this ability to just ask me the right questions. But of course, that comes to today's sort of topic that I want to allude to, is because you're really listening, aren't you? Right. But you call it something else.
I call it power listening.
Which I love.
Okay.
Sounds nicer than active listening.
Yeah, active listening is a bit of a cliche, I think. It's now overused. And it also suggests you have to be active. And actually, power listening is more about various techniques you can use that you can use them consciously and learn them as a habit, even though we are actually already evolutionarily equipped to do them. But active listening suggests you have to sort of take an active role. And actually, power listening is more or less the opposite. Coaches will have heard of the three stages, the three levels of listening, which is basically what this is all about. And absolutely. And you talked, you know, you don't know what you're going to talk about. But it's
because I'm sure many people turn up with proper problems. I just turn up going, oh, I wonder what it'll be today. And it's always mind blowing. You seem to gather my like chaos that's going on out there and bring it all into this, make sense of it.
That is, again, essentially what a coach does, draws out the sense. Yep. And he does that by participating in what my trainer called Dominic, he called it the coaching dance. And when you're dancing, you have to be very aware of your partner's body. I'm a useless dancer, I should point out. My wife could tell you how bad I am. But
too left feet.
but you actually learn on a coaching course how to actually the techniques required and the mindset required for active listening. But perhaps maybe, I don't know, if you want to say why it's important for your topic of partnership.
What I, I was just thinking though, when I was doing, see what the podcast people can't see is me doing hand gesture of like crazy arms in the air, shaking around going, all these ideas I have going on in my head and you make sense of it. But actually when you think about, and I really realized this when I was writing The Robot Proof Recruiter, and I always say to people, chapter 5 is the crux of that entire book, which I completely crowdsourced. And it's all about the intake strategy session, which is the most important part of the whole recruitment process, which is pretty well taking my hands in the air going nuts and taking all of the hiring manager's information and getting it down on paper correctly so that you can partner with them properly to fill a role. So I thought you might be able to share some tips and tricks and stuff about, like, how do you do that? How do you get that?
Right.
I'm still making hand gestures. Yeah. The only problem with this being a podcast.
Yes, no, I also
you miss quit. My arms. Anyone who's seen me speak knows my arms do a lot of talking.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I should say I wasn't particularly good at it when I was in HR, I must say. It's something I realize now. But yeah, you said get all the ideas from the manager's head onto paper and draw kind of sense from it. And I would say that that's where power listening comes in, so it's so important, because very often the manager has some sort of idea, but you don't know what's behind it. And actually, when you can get unravel the layers, then you actually get to something much more important for your recruitment strategy or your recruitment commission that they actually want to give you. But the question is, how do you do that? Because, you know, you've got an Outlook meeting, 1 hour is sort of standard, isn't it?
Yeah,
the automatic default.
If you're lucky to get an hour out of them.
Well,
exactly. It's not some job description they wrote 3 years ago that's in the bottom drawer that they just pulled out and shove at you.
Well, yeah. There you go. Job description. I mean, geez.
Yeah, no.
That's a very good example, because the job description often misses out the most important substance, actually, of what the person you're looking for is, unfortunately. And so, you know, the meeting's been 3 times postponed, and then you get in, you're in a rush, you panic, he's in a rush and a panic, something going on. And basically, it's kind of seen as a technical meeting, if you like. Basically, I will transmit my ideas to the HR partner or the recruiting partner as the manager, hiring manager, and they will go and execute like a program. Okay.
Yes. And that's that out of balance. They think that HR or recruitment is a service, not a partner.
Right.
As well.
That's
again, hand gestures going on here where I'm trying to show balance of scales.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to take this to video.
I didn't show you, Katrina.
No, this is true.
And that comes back, of course, to bite you in the bum later when you say HR hasn't delivered, you know, recruitment hasn't delivered because they see it as a service, you know, and you might have SLA. I mean, that's not a partnership if it's an SLA, isn't it? I dictate, you act. But, I mean, the point, going back to the active listening or the power listening, is that it's all actually about rapport, building an understanding of the other person. And creating the bonds. I mean, I've got the definition up here of rapport. A relationship characterized by agreement, mutual understanding, or empathy that makes communication possible or easy. All right? So who wouldn't want to have easy
communication,
with mutual understanding in a relationship characterized by agreement? And hand on heart, how many of those relationships actually meet that definition? So my kind of tip would be, your goal as, well, hiring manager, but also more often, I guess, the onus is on the HR part, whether recruitment or business partner, is to aim to build that rapport.
Yeah.
Because we do business with people. I mean, in the end, he's from finance or she's from finance and you're from HR or recruitment. Unfortunately, silos define these barriers, but in the end, it's human to human, and everybody's experienced how with one hiring manager it's far easier and constructive to work than with another.
Why in the mastermind I include like influencing and things like that, and we go through like different styles and like have quite a lot of fun with it, really, like uncovering our own styles and then looking at other people's styles to see exactly what you're saying, because it's like understanding how, because you do have to get them on side, don't you? no matter their personality. You need to get to that ease of communication you just mentioned.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I mean, again, this is my kind of coaching cap on. I'm hearing influence and get them on side.
It's a little bit. That sounds harsh, doesn't it? But you call it power listening. Is it not fighting?
Power listening is not manipulation, actually.
Oh, okay.
It can be used to
manipulate. I didn't mean manipulate.
It's a very strong power to have, but it can be, and it can be used to manipulate, just like any strong.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean it that way.
I know, yeah. But to get to that relationship characterized by agreement and mutual understanding, okay, and while it takes two to tango, one person has to start it off. So perhaps the question is then, you know, what does it achieve, and how do you do it? Okay. And maybe we're just cut to the chase, and then how would you do it? And there are techniques that you can actually consciously do, learn to do, and make habitual. There's about four or five I could describe. But I mean, one very simple one you can start trying out, even after you've listened to this podcast, is what I call the three monkeys. It's basically physical mirroring. Mm-hmm. Or physical and tone of voice and use of language that the other person is using. And you know, I'm afraid the pubs are still closed, or at least in this part of the world. I don't know about in the UK.
Yeah. No, outside.
Outside.
You can be outside.
Anyway, well, enjoy a freedom pint and just observe the people around you. And you'll probably see people naturally mirroring what other people are, you know, as they talk. And it's something evolution. That's how we discover when we met someone from a different tribe many, many tens of thousands of years ago. You know, that's how we connected. There are even neural sensors behind the eyes that observe the thousands of muscles in our face that are moving all the time based on our emotions, etc. So,
actually, I love that. I love the one you shared as well. So you can't do it at the pub, but getting people to sit back on video chats as well, so you could see more body language to help mirroring.
Right, exactly. And that's something you mentioned, because we're all, of course, online these days, and it makes it much harder, I have to say. But what that is about is because in the end, only like 7% of our message is verbal.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the words we say, and sometimes the words we don't say. All right. Well, that's the paraverbal, which is another, I don't know, 15% or something. Or 20% of the message. And that's what we're not saying. And that's the tone of voice we're using, the speed. And then you've got, of course, the body language, which is actually, you know, something like over 50% of the whole message. You talked about waving hands. And
Everyone's missing that.
Yeah, and the gestures, all of that. So that's why if you can ask them to have a better view of more of what they're doing, you're going to get more feedback. And this is maybe just to tie it into our coaching sessions, is what I'm doing. I'm observing not just the things you're saying, but how you're saying them and what you look like when you're saying them. And that can be really powerful to see what's going on there.
You often will notice when I have a sharp intake of breath, or like you'll say something and it hits a nerve and I'm like, and you always notice it. You never miss it. And I guess it's the same when you're trying to get that information from a hiring leader.
It's
really noticing that as well. Like where they speed up and they're a bit more excited, I guess, or where they slow down, or, you know, if they look a bit bored, or I don't know. Is that the sort of stuff they'd be looking for?
All that sort of stuff. And you say, get the information. I would say, allow it to be revealed. Because the other thing that this does...
You keep picking on me for saying that. That's probably that Australian, just get on with it. Give me the information. Give me what I need.
Well, getting that, that's maybe, you know,
it's true.
People
very direct.
Get something from each other.
Yeah.
And when you abandon that mindset, then actually you get more. Reveal more. And if you can pick up on that with your hiring manager, for instance, and notice these moments, and we are, first of all, you are visibly showing empathy.
Yes.
Makes the other person feel at ease. Okay, no one's going to reveal, actually, I need this person to be like this because in our team we've got this toxic guy. So we need this person. You know, I mean, he's not necessarily going to say, because who's going to, in an unsafe space, admit that in their team they've got a troublemaker? But once you've created, and that guy feels, or he, she, feels at ease in that conversation with you, then they're much more like, and you can pick up on it, and you're reflecting their feelings, then they're much more likely to come out with that very important bit of information for you to hire the right person.
So from what you're saying, it's almost like going into the conversation thinking, I'm here to discover rather than get. What can I find out?
Right.
It's like, oh, I wonder what this will be about. So a bit more curious and a bit more light.
Right.
And then mirroring.
Right.
So if you're mirroring their tone of voice and their behavior, they're going to start feeling relaxed.
It actually, the neuron sensors behind the eyes actually pick up on that. And, you know, the hormonal changes then, et cetera, emotional, it actually biochemically works. And you came to the curiosity, exactly.
Oh, yeah, I love a bit of curiosity.
The curiosity. So, you know, I mean, we're kind of somehow educated and trained to ask closed questions. You know, we want a quick answer, yes, no. It's very quick and efficient, but it leads... It stops discovery. Whereas an open question that doesn't have a yes/no answer actually, and you know, recruiters should be able to let you know about this because they use it in their interviews. I would like to think because you discover more about the candidate than simply have you done this? Yes, no.
Yeah.
So
I know Steve Levy mentions in my book things like what problem are you coming in to solve, or what problem are they coming in to solve? And then you end up with a whole load of information just by a what question rather than, as you're saying, the yes/no.
Right, exactly. So how, you know, how questions are very good ones. When be careful with why.
Yeah, why is it a harsh one, isn't it? People get a bit defensive, don't they?
Absolutely, because we tend to think of why as being interrogatory, is that a word?
Yeah.
You know, that's with a judgment call behind it, okay? It's like a trick question.
Do you think that's because, and you know this with little kids, when we're little and we go, why, and we get told to shush, do you think it stems from that? Maybe it stems from
maybe,
that.
Maybe, yeah.
It's possible, is it? See, there goes my curiosity. I can't help myself.
Right, yeah. I'm no psychologist. I just apply psychological, you know, techniques rather than actually getting behind what's one, but there could well be, exactly.
So
open questions. How did the meeting go is far better than did the meeting go well.
Yes.
You're going to find out much more about that with, you know, how did the meeting go? And the other thing is also checking comprehension. So repeating back, summarizing, repeating back to the other person. So this is what I'm hearing. You know, I'm hearing that, da, da, da. And that, again, if you're hitting the right notes, the other person thinks, this person understands me. This is my friend.
It's funny, that one, because one of the things I've noticed with the recruiters coming through my mastermind is that they develop that almost fearlessness of asking that question. Now, I know it sounds strange, but to repeat back, because the hiring manager say it's a technical role, you know, we might say, oh, they need XYZ technology, and the recruiter doesn't really get it, but feels like they should know the answer already, even though they're not a technical person and they don't do the job. And it almost takes a little bit of gumption to just say, right, okay, so I've heard that, is that correct? Or to query and say, I don't understand, can you help me with that?
Right.
Are there any tips for... Is that still what questions, I guess? But with that, just feeling safe enough to answer that back. Oh, sorry, so repeat it back.
Repeating back, as I said, it kind of, if you've got it right and you've summarized it succinctly and accurately, then the person's going to say, yeah, this person really understands me.
Yeah.
And if you're getting it wrong, it's a chance to make sure that there's no misunderstanding.
Yeah.
I mean, how many meetings have ended and one or both parties have gone away and said, actually, what does he mean by that?
You know, yes. And as recruiters, we should not be ending that way. We should be ending with, I understand exactly what I'm doing here. The hiring manager knows what I'm doing here.
Right.
Yeah, so it's
predictable,
important.
Safe, relationship as well. So, and also you're demonstrating a certain vulnerability, which yes. stimulates vulnerability in others, you know.
Yeah. And I think there is that, again, going to the fearlessness, that fear to be vulnerable, that fear to, oh, well, I should already show that. But of course you can't know. And that's why I just think it's so important to do what you're saying, repeat it back and just see. Because again, vulnerability doesn't hurt. And it's been interesting that that word has been a common thread through the interviews, through this podcast so far,
mm-hmm.
about the really good leaders are quite vulnerable and they're not afraid to go, I don't know.
Right. Well, yeah.
Quite nice.
We're talking about the power listening, which I do a workshop on, but I also I haven't got a workshop on it, but on the human skills of leadership. And one of them is creating a safe space. And the first thing a leader can do to create a space is to demonstrate his or her own vulnerability.
Okay, tell us how you get them to do that. No, don't. Where can they find out about that? You have a website, don't you?
Oh, I'm on LinkedIn basis.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about LinkedIn. You definitely want to have a look.
But if anybody wants, you know, that I did a webinar a year ago about this and I recorded it. So anybody wants the recordings, I'm happy to send them the recordings to the six human skills that every leader should have in a COVID, at the time COVID, these days post-COVID environment.
That was very optimistic there, Roderick, post-COVID. Roderick's decided, yay! Wouldn't it be wonderful?
Perhaps, of working from distance as well. Yeah.
And I do think going back to that importance of that, the power listening. When you're doing that though, what if you are hearing the hiring managers really resisting flexible working and things like that? Is that again just to ask them more questions to get beyond what the fear is of? Because I feel like a lot of recruiters are going to come against that kind of question going forward. Because at the moment, it's fine. Everyone can work wherever they want. But there are companies out there being a bit silly about where people are going to work going forward.
Well, one thing's the company. And what is a company? It's a body of human beings. And that's kind of generally influenced strong. The higher up in the org chart, the stronger that influence, and it's pretty hard to do something about that one person lower down the food chain. But if it's one particular manager, and I dealt with this on many occasions, badly probably, is that the particular manager, the mindset is if I can't see the work, they're not working.
Yeah, presenteeism.
Behind that is kind of this image that without them, the team would not be functioning. And that you're going in, if you're going to be, inquiring about that, be prepared because you are going right into the heart of their ego, into the heart of their own self image and their feeling of self-worth. So you're getting into pretty awkward territory. So that's why that rapport and that relationship has to be so strong and safe and meaningful empathy. I can't remember now what was in the definition.
Yeah. You certainly wouldn't want to sort of hit it with why do they have to work in the office? Whereas actually you're right. If you've done all of that at the beginning and built that great rapport, and it'll probably take time before you get to the point where you can query them on that, then you can say like, what is it about the working from home that sort of is concern for you and very gently prize it out of them. But you're right. Once they've got the safety.
And I'm not really sure what to advise in that situation, except that it will depend very much on the level of trusting and mutual understanding that you have with the relationship with that manager. And of course, you're sailing against the wind a bit if the corporate message is one of now restrictions are over, back to the office, everybody.
Be interesting to see what happens to those companies.
We will see.
They're definitely not power listening to their staff. That's for sure. But I did love the image that you showed me, because again, no one could see your podcast, with the almost like the fists.
Yeah.
That's where, if you don't want it to be everyone's coming in against each other.
Well, that's so often when two people meet. And it doesn't matter what departments they're in, or even the kind of the company and the customer. is the idea that I have to get my agenda across. I have to tick the boxes at the end of this meeting, and that's all that counts. And it's that will work short term. You can win short term, but it creates this me against them or them against me atmosphere. And then you're in the realm of basically survival of the fittest, or, you know, the winner takes all. And that's not going to help create a relationship. There's going to be one who's going to feel they've won, the other feels they lost, and no one likes losing, do they?
Yeah.
So again, if you come in with the curious mindset, with this idea that you're going to unravel and discover,
discover.
Right, exactly. Then you're going to avoid this loggerhead, this confrontational, transactional bond that will arise from that.
I think when you're going with that place of curiosity, you are going to ask better questions, because you're just going to naturally be feeling more playful, aren't you?
Absolutely,
yeah. Oh, that's interesting. And it's funny, because if you hadn't mirrored back to me my language, I wouldn't have picked up how actually quite aggressive I was being with that. So I'll have to definitely get you to read the next book through, just to make sure I'm not being aggressive in my tone. Anyway, Roderick Lambert, obviously I know where to get you. I think, believe I have another coaching session booked with you shortly. But if people want to find you, LinkedIn is the easiest.
Yep, Roderick Lambert on LinkedIn. That's where you'll find me
quite regularly.
The quickest and easiest, yeah.
Yes. Quite regularly it's talking about coaching, but also nutrition, I've noticed.
Indeed, I've pivoted a little bit because the second aha moment, apart from realizing that there's no deep, meaningful purpose, at least for me, in creating value for the shareholder, was that I don't have time to look after. I look after my career and I'm trying to look after my family. I don't have time to look after myself, and I'm getting ill. And getting to the stage where I was starting to have problems. My one doctor said metabolic illness, the first time I'd ever heard of this.
Oh, wow.
Metabolic syndrome. And even said, you know, that I might be on my way to my first heart attack. And so I studied that quite a lot. Again, I'm that thinking, researching type.
Yeah.
And discovered that actually everything we believed and were taught and heard from our doctors or from
other places
is the guidelines about how we should be eating is completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Cuts to today, I applied what I learned to myself. In 6 months, lost 20 kilograms. That was 2 years ago. I'm still around 72 kilograms for my 179 centimeters.
Wow.
Healthy. All my problems have gone. Energy
and
enthusiasm. So I realized I can help other people in that corporate world.
Yeah.
And you don't have to spend every day in the gym.
Which is the best part, to be fair.
Exactly.
I love a dog walk, but don't make me go to the gym.
You don't have to go to the gym, Katrina.
I must admit, I was quite shocked. You know, I've only known you slim, so when I saw that photo, I was like, "Whoa!" Yeah. I love the fact it can be incorporated into what they're doing, and I agree. I just think we need to be healthy in all the areas of our life, and so often it's in imbalance. So,
absolutely.
Thank you so much for those pearls of wisdom. As ever, whenever I do these podcasts, I learn so much. I'm so loving it. So it's wonderful. So thank you again, particularly as you did jump in quite last minute. And I threw curveball questions at you as ever. So Roderick Lambert, thank you so much.
Katrina, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Hiring Partner Perspective Unedited podcast, proudly supported by the people at WorkDrive. Hopefully you really enjoyed what you heard and have left feeling inspired. And if so, I would love your help to create real change. Please pass this podcast on to your hiring leaders and other recruiters and HR. Even share it on your social channels if you feel so inclined. But the more reach we can get, the more change we can create. So please remember to subscribe, of course, on your favorite podcast platform. And do come and say hello at Hiring Partner Perspective on Instagram, where I share behind the scenes of what's going on. Until next time, thank you.
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.